help me welcome our speaker tonight, Tim from the Ambler Speaker Group.
Hey everybody, my name's Tim and I'm an alcoholic. Hey everybody, and I'm happy to be here tonight. And those are two things I never ever thought I would say, because I was the guy who was convinced that Alcoholics Anonymous didn't work. But we'll get to that a little bit later in my story. You know, I should tell you that I have a sobriety date. It's July 5th, 2013. I have a home group. It's the Ambler Speaker Group. We're down in Ambler, just a little while down 309. And, you know, I have a sponsor. I'm pretty sure my sponsor knows that he's my sponsor. I called him today and told him how nervous I was, and he told me to get over it. well, maybe he didn't say it so nice, but... I'll tell you, you know, good thing the big book gives directions. You know, I'm supposed to kind of describe in a general way what I was like, what happened to me, and, you know, what I'm like now. So, you know, what I was like, you know, as a kid growing up, there was always two emotions that I identified with really strongly, more than others. One was anger, one was sadness. And I was always that way, you know, even as a kid growing up, like other kids watch Sesame Street and they would get into like Grover or Big Bird or Cookie Monster, you know, I identify with Oscar the Grouch. You know, his message resonates with me. I don't know why. Always, you know, sought acceptance, and I never found it. I sought acceptance in school, and, you know, I was really good in school, except that the kids that I liked in school thought I was conceited. I sought acceptance in sports, and, you know, I was good, but never, like, good enough or as good as I wanted to be. I sought it in music. I thought if I can learn how to play the guitar really well, everyone will like me. And it just never happened, you know. I always felt, you know, so I never felt like I fit in. I always felt like an outsider. And, you know, just, you know, everybody says that. But, you know, when you feel it, you feel it, you know. And, I don't like it, and I want to change that. And all that did change one day. I'm at my grandfather's funeral, and, you know, he was from that side of the family that I didn't know that well, and it's hot, it's August, I'm really uncomfortable, I'm 13 years old, you know, along with all the other, you know, uncomfortable things, you know, and, you know, you know, I didn't even feel sad because I really didn't know him that well. And we're at the reception afterwards, and my dad says, you know, do you want a beer? And I was like, sure. And, you know, all that awkwardness, all that shyness, all that disappeared. And the feeling was like electric. It was like, finally, you know, this is what I've been missing my entire life, you know. And for the first time, I felt okay. And, you know, the way people reacted to me, you know, was incredible, because I knew people laughed at my jokes. They thought I was funny. They wanted to be around me, and I had something to say. And, you know, afterwards, I remember, you know, people telling me, you know, afterwards, you know, they said, oh, you were a riot the other night, this and that. And I was like, okay, you know, and, for the first time I felt okay. I chased that feeling all through high school. You know, before we would do anything, you know, we would go down. I grew up in Northeast Philadelphia, and we would go down. There's a liquor store on Oxford Avenue right at the Margaret Orthodox L stop. And before we go to dances before school or anything, really, if we were like Friday night would start, we would go out and we would get one of the homeless guys who lived behind the billboards to go in the liquor store for us, you know. And, everything was great, you know, like drinking made everything better. And, you know, if it was a good time, it was going to be a great time if we were drinking. Unfortunately, you know, consequences happen, and they started to happen for me. And as a result, I had problems, you know, with school, police, got kicked out of school a couple of times, got escorted home by the police more than a couple of times, you know, and as a result of this, I had problems with my folks. And they sort of thought that drinking was the problem, and we had a difference of opinion. I thought drinking was the solution to me. So I devised this plan. So quickly I figured out that they're the problem because they want to keep me from my solution. So I devised this plan to get out of their house and to get on my own. And it was about this time, or around this time, I started working in restaurants. And I love restaurants. I love working in restaurants. I still cook for a living, you know, to this day. And I started working in restaurants, and finally I felt acceptance, you know, that I've been seeking, right? I was good enough, you know, I was part of something, and, you know, we were all united for this common goal, right? And it was the first thing I was really good at and got accepted for, and I figured, well, this is it. I'm going to go to cooking school. And I'm going to be this great super chef, you know, and I'm going to, you know, show everybody, you know. And that happens to an extent, you know. And I'm working in this restaurant, and it was a brand new restaurant, and I was super busy, and I'm making a lot of money. And unfortunately, those consequences, they come again. And you know, one night on the way home, I drove, you know, this car through one tree and into another. We had been out all night drinking. There was my girlfriend at the time, you know, was in the car. And we wound up in the hospital for a long time. You know, I was there for like 10 days, and she was there for a lot longer. So when I get out, I was charged with a DUI, and the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania thought I had a problem with drinking, and they suggested very strongly that I go to these classes as the result of my parole or ARD, I think they call it, right? And you know, I go to these classes, and I meet this guy at these classes. It's sort of like group therapy or whatever, you know. And, you know, he takes a real interest in me, and I don't know why. And he says, Tim, you know, have you ever thought about going to AA? And I was like, no. And he said, well, let me ask you a question. How well do you think you handle alcohol? And I'm 21 years old at the time, and I'm like, you know what? I don't think anybody handles it that well. And he's like, oh, all right. You know, I didn't realize it, but he was from AA, and he was trying to 12-step me, right, at the time. And there was this guy behind him, and I remember this to this day. He said it clearly. He said, hey, he's talking to the counselor. He says, hey, don't worry about that guy, you know. You know, sometimes, you know, you can bring the horse to the water, you can't make him drink, but maybe you can make him thirsty. And I was like, man, you guys and your sayings, you know, and I don't know what it was, but I got this aversion, right, to anybody who was trying to help me, right, because I thought I knew it all. You know, what I did was, is I said, well, you know what, I can stop drinking on my own, you know, I can stop. You know, it's, you know, drinking is the problem, I'll stop, right? And, you know, yeah, I'm good for about 6 months, you know. And then I think, well, you know, I can, you know, have one. And it always starts the same way. My next run-in with, brush with AA, I guess you want to say, comes in 1994, that girl that I was in that car accident with, we eventually get married, you know, through a strange set of circumstances, you know, and I think this is fate, you know, and I'm like, you know, this is meant to be, you know, and I'm really thinking this is what I need, you know, I need to settle down, I need to, you know, I need to calm down, I need to have a, you know, a home, a family, all this stuff, right? And, you know, that lasts for about a year, you know, and then on our first anniversary, you know, we're out at one of her best friend's weddings and, you know, I'm trashed, you know, and we're supposed to be going somewhere and wind up driving, you know, the wrong way on a one-way highway. And she's not too happy with me, and I'm not too happy with her. And one thing leads to another, and I assault her physically. And, and she takes off in the car. And I eventually make it home, I learned later that she was pregnant at the time with our second child. And the guilt, shame, and remorse of that night led me into, I said, I gotta do something, you know, and I go to AA. And, I go, living in Roxborough at the time. I go to the 6809 Center on Umbria Street. I walk up the stairs and I find the seat closest away from where everybody else is. And I sit there and, I hear some people talking and I don't hear anything. And I go to a couple meetings. Nothing happens, and I'm like, you know, maybe this stuff, you know, same for me. I'll just, you know, stop drinking, and I'll be all right. Well, you know, as you can imagine, that marriage doesn't last, I'm kind of, whenever something bad happens to me, I stop drinking because I always think that drinking's got something to do with it. I always start again too. What happens next is I decide that, you know, restaurants are the problem, and I'm going to get out of restaurants, and I'm going to start working a normal job, 9 to 5, and I'm going to be like everyone else. And I get a job as an outside sales rep. I'm driving a lot, and I'm working like 9 to 5. I'm not making a lot of money, but, you know, it's different. And, once again, consequences, and I get a DUI again, and I don't know how I didn't go to jail, but I didn't. I really finessed that one, and I knew the answers to the questions they were going to ask me, and I got ARD for the second time. I don't know how that happens. I decide I'm going to go back to AA again. And this time I'm going to a speaker meeting in Bryn Mawr. And, one day, I would go every Saturday night. And one day they say, is anyone new here, or this or that? You know, and I make sure I sit way in the back, you know, so nobody knows, right? And this guy turns around and he says, "Hey, you're new here." And I'm like, and I do one of these. I'm like, yeah. And he says, you know, my name's so-and-so. And, we talk for a while. And he gives me his number. And I thought that was weird because I'm not into guys. I'm into girls. And, weird, you know. And he says, "Call me." And I'm like, well, sure. And, I think I called him once and I said, "So, tell me, how do I not drink?" And, he said, "Well, you just, don't drink." And I was like, okay. And, I never called him again. And, what happens is, I finally get back into the restaurants and I get the best job I ever had in my life. And, I felt that acceptance again that I, so crave, and I'm in this restaurant and, I'm the guy, and I'm making money. for this restaurant, and you know, business is going well, and everything is going great, and I meet a girl, you know, and it's, you know, incredible, you know, and what happens is, we have a couple kids together, and, you know, I'm making money, and, one thing happens, you know, after another, and it's all good. I wind up on TV once, you know, pretty cool, you know, and, then as soon as they said the recession's over in 2011, they said, you know, good news, everybody, recession's over. The business at this restaurant went down, and I got called upstairs, you know, for a meeting, and the owner of the restaurant said, Tim, we don't want to say goodbye, but adios, you know, I he just had enough of my shit, you know, that I'm the guy who knows better than him, and I'm going to tell him how to run his business and this and that. And I'm like that, you know, I'm like that, you know, I can't take criticism, you know, I'll work really hard at something and figure it out and then give up on it. And, you know, what happens is now it's 3 weeks before Christmas, and I'm like that guy, you know, man. All I did for that guy, you know, and I find another job. I take a job at a crisis center in Germantown, and I'm thinking, you know, this will only last a little while until I find another job, you know, another really good paying job. And it doesn't. And I'm not making the money I once was, and I'm really feeling the pinch. And I start to blame everybody. And I blame my ex-wife, you know, my first wife, you know, about, you know, bugging me about those child support payments from the first marriage. And I blame my current girl for spending all the money, you know, and, you know, whatever, you know, it's not my fault, you know, and I blame that guy, you know, who fired me, and I blame God, too, you know, I'm like, you know, I'm like, have these conversations, you know, with people, and I'm like, you know, I feel the same way about God that he feels about me, you know, he doesn't like me, and I don't like him back, you know, So what happens is, what I do start to do is I have a lot more free time on my hands because I'm, you know, I'm working more 9 to 5. And I'm drinking every night. And, I convince myself that my problem is not drinking, right? It's that I'm depressed. So I go see a doctor and I say, you know, I'm depressed. And he says, well, how much do you drink? And I'm like... I'm like, well, you know, and before I can get an answer, he says, well, you know, we think, 14 drinks a week is, normal, you know, or sustainable. And I'm like, shit, 14 drinks a week, man. I can do that in one night, man. I'm like, well, I'm right around that, you know, that 2 drink per night minimum, you know. And, I was hungover that day, you know, and I think he knew it. But he says, well, I'll tell you what, why don't you, if you ever want to, we can give you something, but, you know, if you stop drinking, you know, maybe get some time. You know, and I'm like, all right, fine. I know how to stop drinking, you know, whatever. And, I call him back like 2 weeks later. I said, you know, I stopped drinking. He says, yeah. I said, oh, yeah. And he writes me a script for antidepressants, you know, and, that's cool. You know, and he says it'll take about a month for this stuff to kick in, you know. And when you take them, you know. So, I start to take those, and I tell my girlfriend, yeah, I got these antidepressants. Things are going to get better. And she just, you know, rolls her eyes and sighs at the same time because, you know, she's like, yeah, okay. You're depressed, sure. You know, and I'm like, but don't you believe me? And, you know, all of a sudden I can't sleep, you know, and, and my hands are shaking all the time and I can't stop that, you know, and I can't really think straight either. And, what's really going on is I'm going through, you know, alcohol withdrawal, and I don't realize it. And I call the doctor up and I say, I'm nervous. I got this anxiety. And it was really simple. He called it in for me, you know, and I went and I picked it up and he said, just don't drink on these things. It was like, he gave me like Xanax or whatever, right? I'm like, all right, sure. And, of course I start drinking again, you know, because, you know, when I was having those bouts of when I couldn't sleep, I had this revelation, you know, that all the really horrible things that happened in my life were because of drinking, right? And the other, there was two things in common with them. One was drinking and the other one was me. And I was like, oh shit. You know, it was me all along, you know, and if you ever have that thought, I hope you're in the 12-step program. I hope you're going to meetings, because if you're not, it'll make you want to escape that feeling for real. And I started drinking again because I didn't want anybody to find out, to know what I knew now. And comes to July 4th of 2013, and I'm on antidepressants, anti-anxiety, and I'm drinking. And I can't tell you what's going to happen when I pick up a drink. It's either going to be 2 beers, 12 beers, you know, a bottle of wine, or the 3-liter box. I can't tell you what's going to happen. And I wake up on July 5th, and I'm on the couch. And I start to have this conversation, you know, with myself, you know. And, you know, it starts out with that first step prayer, you know, the one that's not in the book. It's like, oh, God, I can't go on like this. Please help me, you know. And, you know, this voice, you know, I start to look at my life, you know, and it's like, not happening the way I thought it was going to happen, you know, all that promise, you know, all that good stuff that I was going to do is just not going to happen. And you know, I look around and I see what a mess I've made of not only mine, but, you know, everyone within arm's reach of me. And you know, I talk to the God that I pretty much have a strong dislike for, and I say, please, just let me slip away, you know, let me slip away. And because, you know, where my life is going, I'm going to be the guy, you know, hanging outside the liquor store whose kids are saying, here, run in and go grab us this, you know. And that's how I see my life going, and I don't want that to happen, you know. And that voice, you know, and I ask God to let me slip away, you know, because I'm tired of living. And the answer that comes back is, why don't you try AA again? And I say, that shit don't work. And the voice, you know, it's ongoing conversation. You know, I was, like I said, I was on the couch. And, his voice says, well, what else do you have to lose? Huh? Can't argue with that. And I go to the computer and I find the AA website and I look it up and I sit there in front of the computer and I find the website and I find everything. I'm sitting there. Nothing happens. Nothing happens. And I see a phone number at the bottom and I'm like, you know, pick up the phone now, pick up the phone, pick up the phone now, pick up. I pick up the phone and I dial it, right? And a woman answers the phone, and I go on for like 5 minutes. And, you know, she says, hold on, hold on, hold on, you know. And, you know, she says, I'm going to get someone to help you. And I said, what do you mean? She's like, well, I'm just the answering service. You know, I'm going to have someone from AA call you back. And I'm like, oh, man, see, I was right. This shit don't work, man. It's July 4th, you know, and nobody's going to call me back, you know, July 4th weekend, I'm sure. You know, and a little while later, phone rings and, girlfriend hands me the phone and she says, I think this is for you. And she says, the woman says, you know, is this Tim? And I say, yeah. And she says, you must be in a lot of pain. And I guess she had talked to the answering service lady. And I say, yeah. And she says, all right, well, this is what you're going to do. You're going to not drink tonight, and you're going to go to a meeting. Can you do that? And I said, I got the not drinking thing down for tonight. And, but I don't know about going anywhere. And, she said, all right. And she helped me find a meeting for the next day, which was Saturday. And, I said, I'm wise ass all the way back from when I was a kid. You know, I said, so lady, tell me, you know, what's going to happen at that meeting? And she says, I don't know, but they'll know what to do. And I was like, wow, that's really honest answer. You know, that's a really honest answer. And for the first time, I thought that someone wasn't, you know, throwing me a line, you know. And what happened is I went to that meeting, and for whatever reason, I made a big mistake, and I sat in the front. and at that meeting, someone got a 28-year coin, and I was like, mm-hmm. And started thinking, started to do a little math. And in my head, and they ask, just like they do at every meeting, they said, is this anyone's first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, or is anyone here for the first time? And, I raised my hand, I said, my name's Tim, and this isn't the first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous I've ever been to, but it is the first time I'm going to say I'm an alcoholic. I don't know where that came from, but and I don't know what happened. The only thing I can really tell you is that something happened, and with that, that depression, anxiety, and the obsession to drink left me, you know, and I have not found it necessary to take a drink from that day to this day. At that meeting, I heard people who had the same problems that I did. I heard people were having problems paying their bills and what they were doing about it and how they were not drinking. I heard people were having problems with their exes and how they were, you know, not drinking and dealing with it. I heard a lot of, and for the first time in my life, I became part of you. I became part of the we. Unbelievable. And I got hope, you know, I got hope for the first time in my life. And I started to think I was going to be okay. And I was on that pink cloud for a couple days. what happened was I started to go to meetings, 7 a.m. meetings, not too far from, you know, where I lived. And, I kind of knew I was going to be all right. And one day that, my girlfriend, the mother of, those kids, you know, one day said, if you know what's good for you, you know, don't come home tonight. Of course I go home, you know, I'm stubborn, hard-headed, you know, and, she confronts me with something and, what was really going on was, it was a line from the big book really describes it well. You know, I was seeking companionship in sordid places. You know, that's what I was doing. And she had told me not to do that, and I kept on doing it. And then she told me to get out, and all my stuff was on the back porch, and I loaded up my stuff with the back porch, and I put it in the car. I had no idea where I was going to go, and I sat in the parking lot, and I remembered something that an old-timer had told me earlier in the day. He looked me straight in the eye, and he said, "Kid, let me tell you something. As long as you don't drink, no matter what happens to you in this life, you, yourself, personally, will be okay." I was like, okay, all right. You know, thank God he told me that day. He told me not to drink and I would be okay. I remembered also somebody had said, you know, don't get too hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. You know, I thought it was the corniest shit I ever heard in my life. You guys all called it halt, and I called it, I was like, whatever, you know. And, you know, thank God I heard that, you know, because I went, as I figured out what I was going to do, I went and I got something to eat. I chatted up that poor waitress in that 24-hour diner all night long. I finally, you know, found a little motel room and I crawled into, and, you know, I decided I was going to write down everything that was bothering me, you know, journal, you know, which I did from time to time, so it wasn't that out of the ordinary. And I didn't drink, and I went back to the meeting, you know, the next day. And, you know, and I'm sharing in the meeting what's going on with me, and the guy, you know, after the meeting, you know, talks to me, and, you know, and he looks me straight in the eye. You know, that's the thing about you guys, you know, you look straight in the eye, you know. I'm more like shoe person, you know. It's not my line, it's the Keith Lewis line. And you know, he says to me, you know, you really want to quit drinking for good this time? And are you willing to do anything to make that happen? I said, I thought to myself, here's my out. This is it, you know, this is it. You know, and I look him straight back in his eyes and I say, yeah, I'm willing. I'm willing to do anything and I want to quit drinking for good. And he says to me, he says, all right, well, this is what you're going to do. You know, you're going to come to this meeting every day. You're going to sit in the front and you're going to share honestly, open and in the first person about how the topic relates to you and your recovery. So, all right. Now, in my head, when he said, you know, you're going to sit in the front, I thought, except on the days I run late, and I'm thinking this in my head, except on the days I'm late, I'll sit in the back, right? And he says out loud, he says, and even on the days you're late, I want you to sit in the front. And I'm like, what the fuck, man? You know? I'm like, this guy's like, what is this, like Jedi, you know? I'm like, he's reading my thoughts, you know? What was really going on was you all knew me a little bit better than I knew myself, you know? You know, that man became my sponsor, and we began to work the steps, and you know, it's you know, I won't get too much in the steps, but I will tell you, you know, one little thing. You know, it's about, you know, he says, one day I call him up and I'm like, you know, you know, and this happened and this happened and this happened, you know, and he always lets me know when it's my turn to stop talking. He says, whoa, you know, and you know, so I have to stop talking, and he's like, well, you know, I'll just do the next right thing. And I'm like, well, what's that? And he says, well, your higher power, you know, will direct you. And I'm like, higher power? I'm like, no. I'm like, I'll figure this out. And he's like, yeah. He says, all right. So, you know, the next time we meet, he says, here, read this chapter called We Agnostics, you know. And he says, I want you to underline all the questions you find in this chapter. And we will sit down and we will answer all these questions. A lot of questions in that chapter. Some of the questions don't even have question marks. They're hard to find. He helped me find those too. And what happened was I also found, I found the God of personal to me, you know, who cared about me. I found that he was there always, whether I cared to acknowledge it or not. Something happened, you know, something happened. And, my life has never been the same since. We began to work the steps, and he took the time, you know, to listen to my fifth step, which took quite a long time. I was out there for a while. Speaking of while, how am I doing on time? So I think I'm all right. And the whole time he's, I'm going to meetings every day, and he's, he's saying, I begin to, he's bugging me to sponsor guys, I don't know. It's just me, nobody chases me out of the meeting and says, "Hey, Tim, be my sponsor," That doesn't happen to me, I know other guys that it happens to. It doesn't happen to me. And, but what did happen to me is, one day, someone walked into my home group and said, I'm from the Interphone committee, and we're the people who answer phones after hours and on holidays. We're looking for volunteers. Anyone interested to see me after the meeting? I'm like, oh, all right, this is it. This sounds like something I should do, And I become an Interphone volunteer, and this cool experience, because I never got that woman's name, who helped me out, I never got her name. Maybe she did. I just, don't remember it. And every time I'm in a meeting and I tell the story, I'm hoping she raises her hand. It hasn't happened yet. I'll keep telling the story. It's been some of the most wonderful experiences I ever had in my life, answering the phones. After hours. I did that for a while, and that woman said, "Hey, Tim, I got a promotion in AA, and I got to go do this other job. Can you take, you want to be Manco liaison for Interphones?" And I said, "Sure. Tell me, what do I got to do?" And I was afraid to say no, because in my home group, they always told me, whenever anybody asks you to do anything for AA, you always say yes. Don't say no. And I was like, sure. And she told me what I had to do. And, eventually she asked me to become the Interphones assistant director. And then, eventually I became Interphones director. And it's pretty cool, because I got to work on a project last year where we were able to introduce technology, and get rid of our answering service, and the calls are forwarded directly, out to our volunteers, and it's no middle person. We saved a lot of money. And, I got to work on that. I got to be a part of that. And, I also got, opportunities to speak at Share a Day. Incredible experience. I got a chance to speak at the Roundup. I get into service that way. A little bit, about, what I'm like now, remember my first wife and our kids. She invited me over for Christmas Eve this year. I thought that was a pretty big deal, And I got to be there, And I got to be around, all the our kids, and I got to be a dad, and I got to be a sober dad. I got the opportunity to watch my daughter graduate from Penn State University earlier in May, and I got to be a part of that, and I get to be a part of my children's lives. And the funny thing is, I don't know if I've gotten that much better, but I know everyone around me has gotten better. I know it for a fact, you know, and that's the result of putting the principles behind the steps into practice. I've had these, experiences which I can't explain. One morning, I'm having breakfast with my ex-girlfriend, you know, I keep thinking that'll come back someday. It hasn't yet, you know, but, it's not going to help me from hoping, but we're good, you know, we don't live together, but, you know, it's probably the relationship might be even better than when it was when we were together. And we're sitting there talking, and we're talking about people we know, and we're talking about people, you know, oh, this guy bought a restaurant, and this guy sold his restaurant, and this and that, you know. And, I'm like, oh, wow, great for them. And she says, wow, I'm kind of shocked at your reaction to all this. And because, you know, she remembers me as that, you know, envious, jealous, you know, backbiting guy, you know, that, you know, like, who do they think they are, you know, that's going to tell everybody how to run their business and what they deserve. And, you know, I'm like, well, that's really good, you know, that I hope it all works out for them. I'm happy, you know. And she says, what happened to you? And I started, you know, we had a conversation, you know, and I said, you were telling me the whole time. I couldn't hear it. You were showing me the whole time, and I couldn't see it. And in my heart, I couldn't feel it, you know, beyond all the proof laid at my feet. You know, it was a tender moment, you know, and, you know, 2 days later, I'm in church with my boys, you know, and, they start to play this hymn, you know, and I think, oh, I know this one. It's Faith of Our Fathers, you know. It wasn't Faith of Our Fathers. It was this hymn that says, open my eyes so I can see. Open my ears, Lord, so I can hear. Open my heart. Now, tears start to stream down my face. You know, what the hell is that? You know, what is that? You know, as in my opinion, nothing less than the healing grace of God. And he gives me little glimpses to let me know when I'm on the right path. It gives me glimpses too and hints when I'm straying off the path, you know. It's usually how I feel inside. My sponsor will tell you all about those. I have a home group, I have a new home group. I stopped going to the 7 a.m. meetings, and I started going to this meeting on Wednesday night. I was the first meeting I ever spoke at, you know, and I had a certain affinity for this meeting, and I would go there every Wednesday night, you know, and sometimes it would just be me and like two or three other guys, you know, and, you know, after about a month of that, I know what everyone in the room is going to share, and I'm like, man, this meeting is dying, you know. And I thought we had to do something, and we held a business meeting, and at that business meeting, I said, you know, I think we should change the format, and I think we should, you know, change a lot of things, and uh, you know, everybody said sure, and we did, and we changed the format to a hour speaker meeting, and we made it a little bit later at night, and we changed the name of the meeting from Sober on Wednesday, which I always hated, you know. I hated Sober on Wednesday. I'm like, what about the other days of the week? Yeah. Yeah. I'm a work in progress, yeah. And so we changed it to Ambler Speaker Group. And, that meeting has started to grow. And, we go around to different groups. I've been here a couple of times, you know, trying to, you know, poach some speakers, you know. And, Jeff came down to our home group, our Ambler Speaker Group, and he spoke, last week, and he returned the favor. He said, hey, Tim, we need a speaker. And I was like, sure, you know. And I was really nervous before I, came up here. And my sponsor told me, he said, all you have to do is tell the truth. And, I can't say enough about, the people in the rooms, who've helped me, and the people in service who've helped me, and, the people who were patient and tolerant of me, and helped me to get over my contempt, prior to investigation, and helped me to begin to experience, the power and the presence of a loving God, I found it through all of you, and the program, and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and, I don't think I can say anything more profound than that, so I think I'm going to stop talking. I wanted to thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you.
This group would like to thank Tim again for sharing his experience with us tonight.